Welcome to Torat Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be studying Megillat Esther, Perek Zayin. The chapter opens immediately following the end of yesterday's episode. When we left off, Haman was being hurried to the Feast of Esther before he could even conclude his conversation with his wife and his advisors. And chapter 7 opens with the king and Haman having arrived to drink with Queen Esther. The king said to Esther on the second day of the wine feast, "What do you desire, Queen Esther? And it will be granted you. What is your request? Up to half the kingdom, and it will be done." Note that the king himself now addresses her as Esther Hamalka, Queen Esther. It appears that the transformation of Esther from shy young maiden to confident and imposing queen has not escaped him. And Queen Esther responded and said, "If I have found favor in your eyes, your majesty, and if it pleases the king, may my life be granted to me as my desire, and my nation as my request." The Targum, the Aramaic translation of the text, which we have already noted is far more than merely a translation, explains that the apparent redundancy of Esther's expression is not mere repetition. According to the Targum, Esther lifted her eyes heavenward and said, "Im matzati chen be'enecha ha-melech," directing her speech to Hashem, and then lowered her eyes to Achashverosh and said, "Ve'im al ha-melech tov," addressing the earthly king. In the Sefer Mishpitzot Zahav, a contemporary work, the author asks why the Targum brings this insight here and not in chapter 5, when Esther invited the king to the second party using similar language. He notes that in that case, both clauses were expressed in the third person, as one addresses a human king, whereas in this case, Esther speaks in the second person in the first clause, "Be'enecha ha-melech," in your eyes, as we speak to Hashem when we beseech him in prayer, directly, and then reverts back to the third person, "Ve'im al ha-melech tov," if it pleases the king, addressing Achashverosh obliquely. How fortunate are we that we enjoy such an intimate relationship with Hashem, Melech Malchei Hamlachim, the King of all kings, that we may address him directly. Esther continues her plea, "For we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, killed, and eradicated. Had we been but sold as slaves and bondswomen, I would have kept silent. For the adversary is unworthy of the king's anger." He is so far beneath the king's attention. Thereupon, King Achashverosh said to Queen Esther in verse 5, "Mi hu ze, ve'ezehu asher mla'o libo la'asot kein? Who is he and where is he that dared to do such a thing?" We might wonder, firstly, why does Esther mention that had her people been sold into slavery, she would have remained silent? It seems like a complete non sequitur. Where did that idea even come from? Secondly, Achashverosh himself signed off on the order to kill the Jews. How is it that he expresses such innocent outrage at the mere mention of such a plan? The Sefer Ohev Yisrael answers both questions at once. When Haman spoke to Achashverosh about his plan for the Jews, he expressed Yikatev le'abdam as if it were written with an ayin rather than an aleph, which in ancient times did not make the same sound. And that phrase would mean to enslave rather than to destroy. But when he dictated the actual letters, he wrote le'abdam with an aleph, and added the words lahashmid v'laharog, to destroy and to kill, for absolute clarity, which was lacking in his conversation with Achashverosh. Therefore, Achashverosh was legitimately shocked and infuriated when he heard how he had been manipulated by Haman. We note as well that implicit in this revelation was Esther's admission that she is of Jewish descent, which she had been hiding for the past 9 years since she had been taken to the palace in the third year of Ahasuerus' reign. Yet, no overt reaction of Ahasuerus to this information is recorded. There are conflicting opinions brought in the Midrash, aligned with the different approaches we learned concerning why Mordechai insisted that she hide her identity in the first place. According to one opinion, Ahasuerus was distressed to find out that she was Jewish, for he himself hated the Jewish people. According to another approach, he was relieved that she was not some foundling abandoned in the marketplace, rather was descended from royalty. It remains an unresolved debate. What is certain is that the king was furious with the plot to eliminate an entire tax-paying nation from his kingdom and demanded to know who dared contrive such a plan. Esther responded to the king's question directly. In verse 6, Ish tsar ve'oyev haman hara hazeh. The adversary and enemy is none other than this evil Haman. In Tanakh, when someone or something is indicated by the word hazeh, this, it implies that the speaker is pointing at the object. How clearly we can envision the regal and impassioned queen pointing unequivocally at the persecutor of her people. V'haman niv'at milifnei ha-melech v'hamalka. And Haman was petrified before the king and queen. The king, in his fury, rose from the wine feast and went out to the palace garden. In his absence, Haman stood to plead with Queen Esther for his life, for he saw that the king had determined to kill him. Maharam Shif notes that we see here another hidden reference to Hashem in the Megillah. The Sofei Tevot, the anagram of the last letters of the four words Ki chalta elav hara'a in verse 7, spell out the name of Hashem. Divine justice is being served. The king returned from the palace garden to the wine feast, and Haman had fallen upon the couch upon which Esther reclined. The king called out, "Does he mean to ravish the queen with me in the palace?" As soon as these words left the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face, indicating that he had been sentenced to death. Then Charvona, one of the king's servants, said, "Behold the scaffold that Haman had prepared for Mordechai, whose words saved the king, stands in Haman's house, 50 cubits high, and the king ordered, hang him upon it." And so they hanged Haman upon the scaffold that he had prepared for Mordechai, and the king's anger abated. Charvona is a relatively minor character in the Megillah, yet in the Piyut, the liturgical poem Shoshanat Yaakov that is recited at the conclusion of our reading of the Megillah, Charvona is mentioned as one who is Zachur Latov, remembered for good. Why is he singled out in this way? According to the Midrash, Charvona was not a particular fan of the Jews. In fact, he was one of the advisors of Haman who had been present when the plan to hang Mordechai was devised, which is how he knew so well of the gallows that stood in Haman's yard. Upon seeing that things were going awry, he had begun to edge himself out of the room, lest Haman try to shift blame upon him. Whereupon Eliyahu Hanavi, Elijah the prophet, came and disguised himself as Charvona and offered the suggestion of the gallows in Haman's yard. This is based on the linguistic parallel of the phrase Zachur Latov, an unusual phrase, usually reserved for Eliyahu Hanavi. Charvona actually appears in the text twice. The first time is in Perek Aleph, where he is named as one of the Sarisim, the messengers sent to bring Vashti to Ahasuerus' feast. And the second is here, at the second feast of Esther Hamalka, when he suggests that Haman be hanged on the tree that he had prepared for Mordechai. In both cases, he is instrumental in removing the anti-hero, clearing the way for the rise of the hero. Vashti is replaced by Esther and Haman by Mordechai. Charvona represents the Olam HaNigle, that which is explicable in the natural scheme of things. And the opinion that the suggestion came from Eliyahu HaNavi in the guise of Charvona represents the Olam HaNistar, in which Hashem orchestrates the events that occur in the physical world. This orchestration of events, which we call Hashgachat Hashem, may be compared to invisible ink written between the lines of the Megillah, which becomes visible only when held up to the light. It is the source of the eternal message of the Megillah, meriting its inclusion in the Kitvei HaKodesh, the Holy Scriptures. Thank you for studying together Le'iloi Nishmat Malka Esther Bat Tzvi Yosef.